Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. John McCain delivered his Republican presidential nomination acceptance speech before a raucous crowd in St. Paul last night. The Arizona senator extolled his work across party lines and promised to end the partisan divide in Washington. Former super lobbyist Jack Abramoff was given a reduced sentence of 4 years in prison because of his cooperation, and New Orleans dodged Hurricane Gustav. Joining me to talk about these stories and more from St. Paul, Slate's John Dickerson. We hope to have Jackie Combs of the New York Times quite soon. And here in the studio with me, Anne Kornblut of The Washington Post. We do invite your thoughts, your ideas throughout the hour. Do call us 800-433-8850 or send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning, Anne. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
And good morning to you, John Dickerson.
Good morning, Diane.
Good to have you with us. John Dickerson, talk about the response to Senator McCain's speech last night. It seems somewhat different from that was given to Sarah Palin.
Yeah, Sarah Palin was the real star of the Republican convention here. So on Wednesday night, that was the big night, the big moment of energy in this Republican campaign. Senator McCain's speech, you know, he's not a great speechmaker, and last night it was kind of halting, and the speech felt, and in fact was, kind of produced by committee. So there were parts of it that were kind of clunky. In the hall, certainly, they were very enthusiastic. There were a lot of doubts, both in the Republican Party and in the press, that McCain would have a unified and energized convention. Sarah Palin certainly put those doubts to rest. And so everybody was very excited in the hall to cheer for him. But in fact, they were so excited, and they'd been told to cheer at the end and to stand up. McCain had a crescendo at the end of his speech in which he called on them to stand up. And unfortunately, as far as the optics go, they were told to stand up. And so they did long before the actual candidate called on them to do so. So it was, a little bit problematic. But if you read the speech, there were a few things in there that Republicans could hold on to.
Can you describe how that auditorium was changed for McCain's speech?
Yes, it was basically a stage like any other for the first 3 days of the convention. Then when McCain came out to speak, essentially they created a runway, almost like a fashion show, out into the audience. The idea here was that McCain does better when he's kind of in a town hall setting. But the thing of it is, while there was this runway and he was sort of in the crowd a little bit more, the speech itself was quite conventional, in front of a podium with a teleprompter. So there was no town hall give and take or exchange or anything like that. So and if you watched it from home, I watched the speech actually on a television to get some sense of how people watched it at home. And one of, again, the slightly problematic elements of it was that behind McCain was an enormous screen on which there was a blue sky, a flagpole, and an American flag. In the hall, that might have looked striking. On television, it gave the effect of a pure neon blue screen behind him, which looked like, you know, when the weatherman does his reports and the map comes up behind him. It was very a very odd way of delivering a speech as far as at least the television audience is concerned.
John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate.com. He's author of On Her Trail, My Mother, Nancy Dickerson. And turning to you, Anne Kornblut, what did you hear last night about specific policy proposals?
Very little. This was a speech that talked a fair amount about biography. He talked a lot about Sarah Palin and talked about a kind of spirit that John McCain would hope to bring to Washington. He talked a lot about reform, shaking things up, saying that other Republicans have come to Washington and been changed by it. We want to come and change Washington. Of course, that line was instantly picked up by the Obama campaign saying, aha, this is what we've been arguing all along. But when he mentioned families, specific families in two specific states, he didn't really explain what he'd be doing to help them, but saying that his presence would help them. And this came under quite a bit of fire this morning. I was reading some of the reviews, not just from partisans, but even some former Bush speechwriters, David Frum, Mike Gerson, and I spoke to a couple of Republicans who'd worked in the Bush administration who said this was a speech that was just kind of all over the map, lacking a sort of unifying theme, as John said, clearly written by committee, and lacking the kind of visuals that they had hoped would really set him apart. You know, John McCain does have reformer credentials, but he didn't mention any of the ways that he's actually bucked his party. He didn't talk about immigration reform, for example. He didn't talk about campaign finance reform. These are issues that would have upset the people in the hall, but might have demonstrated to people out watching on TV at home that he has the kind of experience, the kind of record that he says Obama lacks.
I know that you and Kornblut are going to be tracking Sarah Palin as this campaign goes on. Where will you be going?
Well, I'm going to fill in for a colleague who's going to do it for the rest of the campaign because I'm still covering Obama, but I'm this weekend going to leave tomorrow to meet up with the McCain-Palin bus in Albuquerque. From there, she's going to travel on her own for a few days, which should be interesting, including going on next Thursday, which, of course, is the anniversary of 9/11, to see her son deploy for Iraq. So she'll be going back to Alaska. I expect those to be pretty powerful images. The big question mark is, when are we going to hear her in an unscripted moment? When is she going to start doing interviews? So far, they aren't saying.
Anne Kornblut, a reporter for The Washington Post. And now joining us is Jackie Combs. She's national correspondent for The New York Times. Good morning to you, Jackie.
Good morning, Diane.
Can you talk about John McCain's choice of Sarah Palin to be his running mate? Does that allow him to concentrate on winning independents and or undecided voters?
I'm not sure that it does, Diane. A lot of this, we all have question marks because, you know, we don't know much about her and the voters don't know much about her. I think what's been striking to me is that the focus of the convention became Sarah Palin, and even people kept saying, well, wait till John McCain speaks. You know, he will, you know, tell people more about what he's going to do, and he didn't. And the one thing about this, Sarah Palin's the choice of her has focused attention on cultural issues and social issues of motherhood and abortion and these things. And you come away from this convention with very little idea of what John McCain would do about the single most important issue on voters' minds, which is the economy. And this is doubly bad for John McCain because his whole reputation and record is so heavily focused on national security. And conventions are about speaking to the very independent voters and the swing voters that you mentioned. And this convention, you just had the feeling that he was still trying to get the base solidified and excited. And that's a bad place to be when you're just 60 days away from the election.
Jackie Combs, national correspondent for The New York Times. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Anne Kornblut, you spoke about the fact that individual reporters, editors, have not yet had a chance to pose questions directly to Sarah Palin. Republicans seem to be blaming the media for any questions that are raised about Sarah Palin, saying they're somehow off limits. I know you've written a piece for this Sunday's Washington Post Outlook question that touches on this.
Well, that's exactly right. Having covered Senator Clinton for so long, I thought to myself, watching this whole rollout over the last week, what if this were Hillary Clinton in Sarah Palin's shoes? What if Hillary Clinton back in the 1990s had announced to the country, to the world, that Chelsea were unmarried and pregnant? How would the right have responded then? And as I sort of went through the checklist of things, that the questions that have been raised and not answered by Governor Palin, because she hasn't done any interviews, as you mentioned, so far, I really came away with the conclusion that she has been met with a kind of defense from the Republicans that never would have been applied to Senator Clinton. And I'm curious to see someday going forward whether it would be applied to other female candidates. There seems to be a very sharp partisan divide that Republicans will stand by Republicans who do certain things and not Democrats. And which is not to say that Democrats maybe don't have the same kind of hypocrisy. But as we look at what's happening to Governor Palin right now, we see Republicans, even in the very brief polling that we've seen so far, we've seen that it's not a gender divide. There are not women who support her. It's Republicans. 85% see her favorably. Only about a quarter of Democrats see her favorably. But to the question of, I think the word you would probably use is hypocrisy, I think it's an open question at this point. And I think that there has been an attempt to go after the media because it's an easy target when a campaign is having problems, and they've done so. But the media really hasn't done a whole lot. It's been a week. We haven't interviewed her. And I think, frankly, the media has been getting a pretty bad rap for trying to apply to her the same questions that we would apply to any male candidate.
It would seem that only Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are really holding the campaigns and their surrogates accountable.
Well, they're on too late for me to see most nights as I've been watching the convention. But it's true that they have a lot more flexibility in being able to point out, to compare, juxtapose comments that Karl Rove, Rush Limbaugh made with comments that are now being made about Sarah Palin, the questions of experience that have been applied to Obama that are now irrelevant in their view when it comes to Sarah Palin.
Ann Kornblut, a reporter for The Washington Post. Short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We have three reporters with us, two still there in Minnesota who have been at the campaign and all the goings on at the Republican National Convention. John Dickerson, chief political correspondent for Slate.com, and Jackie Kamm, she's national correspondent for The New York Times. Here in the studio is Ann Kornblut. She's a reporter for The Washington Post. And we do invite your questions, comments. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. John Dickerson, former Democratic vice presidential candidate, now independent Senator Joe Lieberman, addressed the convention. How was his speech received?
Well, it was pretty well received. It was earlier in the week when the Palin news was being sorted out, and also the convention was kind of getting going because it had been delayed because of Hurricane Gustav. So it was a period in the convention where everything was quite unsettled. As we look at this question about how the Republican Party, excuse me, in this case John McCain, pitches himself, there was something extraordinary about that first night, and it was a theme that went throughout this convention, which was the contradictions. You had, Joe Lieberman is a former Democrat speaking to a bunch of Republicans. You had the theme of the evening was essentially that here we're going to nominate two mavericks, the party celebrating people who had bucked their own party, talking about changing the mess in Washington, which has been largely created by a Republican president. So that was one of the big other messages on that Monday night. Lieberman's message, though, was put in prime time, and he made an appeal to independents and Democrats. And so we have, on the one hand, Sarah Palin is a pick that solidified the base, got Republicans in line. But the other big message of the campaign was this appeal to independents. And that's what Joe Lieberman was supposed to do, testifying to John McCain's character as he knew it, particularly on the questions of national security. And so it was pretty well received in the hall. But the real star that night was Fred Thompson, who gave a much more red meat speech, a sort of traditional Republican speech.
And Dan Kornbluth, there's some talk that the Democrats, after the election, may strip Joe Lieberman of his committee chairmanship.
Well, sure. And it's hard to tell from listening to him whether he would mind. He has gone all the way over to the Republican side. This was sort of the final nail in the coffin for Joe Lieberman. There are a lot of hard feelings, not just between the party and Joe Lieberman, but now between Barack Obama and Joe Lieberman, given that Obama had campaigned for him and he continued to campaign and Lieberman continued to campaign against him. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the party to free him, as it were, after this election. But in the meantime, Joe Lieberman was a gift to the Democrats the other night. The Obama campaign has been raising a lot of money this week, not just off Governor Palin, but also off of Lieberman, because he is somebody who really gets the backs up of a lot of Democrats who can't stand listening to him anymore.
Jackie Combs, how would you comment?
Well, I think Senator Lieberman, it's interesting that he was received pretty well, but this comes just days after there had been this organized somewhat behind the scenes movement among conservatives to persuade or force John McCain to give up any hope of having Senator Lieberman as his running mate, because Senator Lieberman, the one place in which he's still in very much in sync with the Democratic Party, is his belief in abortion rights, which is, of course, anathema to the Republicans. And, it's interesting that it seemed almost as if this convention was it was a good show for inside the convention hall and people were happy, but it just wasn't. I'm not sure that he didn't not only didn't do himself much good, Senator McCain, for the wider audience, but may have he actually hurt himself.
Now, John Dickerson, I want to turn to you and raise with you the question that has come up so much, which certainly Rush Limbaugh has echoed, many spokespersons for the Republican Party have echoed, namely that the so-called liberal media is out to get Sarah Palin and John McCain. How do you comment?
Well, I guess I have a couple of reactions. One, this is a strategic move here by the campaign and by conservatives. Sarah Palin was a surprise pick. The campaign, most of the campaign was learning about her while they were rolling her out. And there's no better way to kind of throw up a smokescreen and create a diversion than to get Republicans together on the one thing they can all agree on, which is that the press is at fault. And you can often rally Democrats on that point as well. So the McCain campaign, there was a kernel of standing. There were some press questions that probably went beyond the bounds, questions about her personal life. There were questions about her pregnancies and a variety of medical issues associated with them that I think probably went overboard. But while they may have had a case on those issues, the McCain campaign did some play acting, kind of taking excessive umbrage at questions that were quite central to the case they were making. The best example is Campbell Brown, an anchor for CNN, had a spokesman from the McCain campaign on air, and he made the case that Sarah Palin had foreign policy, national security credentials because she'd been commander of the National Guard. So Campbell Brown asked the first question you would ask, which is, tell me one thing she'd done in that command and control capacity. The spokesman couldn't come up with anything. He then said, he suggested she had some role over the combat troops that fight in the Alaska National Guard, which isn't true. She has no role over them once they're deployed. They are under command of the Pentagon. There's the 49th Missile Battalion, which operates in Alaska. She has no role over them. Campbell Brown challenged that assertion. There was some more back and forth. He finally said, she does deal with the National Guard when it comes to disasters, although he couldn't name one. He could have named the 2007 wildfires that she called up the National Guard to deal with, but he didn't have that at the ready. He had no answer. So the McCain campaign then went nuts and said that this interview was over the line. It wasn't over the line by any stretch of the imagination. Beyond merely complaining, they then canceled Senator McCain's interview with Larry King as retaliation. This largely was to create a diversion, also get Republicans thinking, the press is against her. When she then gave her speech and mentioned the press and said she wasn't, the pundits didn't like her, the crowd in the hall went nuts. So in some ways, this was like releasing sort of a gas into the atmosphere. And when Sarah Palin mentioned this, it lit a spark and there was an enormous explosion, which, served to get Republicans all very excited about her.
And cornbread.
But for John McCain to claim somehow that the media is out to get him is almost laughable. I mean, it's almost hard for them to sustain that, given that for so long he has said that the media was his base and that in his darkest days, when he wasn't going to win the nomination, all he had going for him was the Straight Talk Express. So that's what's made this argument difficult for them. And I'll say, too, that some of the questions that we've been asked to ask of Governor Palin have come from Republicans who have been mortified by this pick. I've heard from more Republicans sort of behind quietly saying, please, will you help vet her? Because we didn't see her coming. We don't know who she is. And so I think John's right that this is something of a feint on the part of the McCain campaign. It's the only card that they really had in their deck this week. But it's not going to stop any reporters I know from asking questions.
Jackie Combs, how is it going to affect your reporting?
Well, I'd like to think it's not going to affect it much at all. I was in a group of reporters who had surrounded Steve Schmidt this week at the convention, who is, a chief strategist for Senator McCain. And he was saying that, and this was the day when the news about her 17-year-old daughter being pregnant had broken. And there were a lot of questions about, had she told Senator McCain that on the one sort of meeting they had, and how had he learned? Did he know this before he offered her the job? And Steve said that we were asking him questions that we would not put to a male candidate. And I later, and people challenged him then, and I then challenged them later too. I mean, I'm a mom as well, and but leave that aside, as a reporter, if Barack Obama and Michelle Obama had a fifth child in April, and that child was a special needs child, and then they found out that a 17-year-old daughter, unmarried, was pregnant, I guarantee you, I'd be first in line to ask Barack Obama, is this really the best time in your life to be running for president?
And I would add to that when John and Elizabeth Edwards found out that she had a recurrence of cancer, we asked that question of them. Now, we obviously weren't asking all the right questions of the Edwardses, but we ask these questions, and to claim that it's somehow a media bias against John McCain, I just don't buy it.
So, John Dickerson, where do both campaigns go from here? Do you continue to see Sarah Palin, for example, belittling Barack Obama's community activism? Do you continue to hear her talk about his lack of experience, or are they going to let that one go?
I think they're still figuring out what they're doing. The McCain campaign is polling in the key battleground states. Just to talk about where the race is right now, we've got 60 days left. It's really about this dozen or so battleground states that now will determine the election. They're going to look for a couple of things from Sarah Palin. They used her to attack on Wednesday night in part to give McCain free rein to not attack. He really didn't attack Senator Obama much. In fact, he was quite gracious in one portion of his speech about the historic nature of Senator Obama's victory. They're going to look and see, if she needs to keep attacking or if she needs to deliver a more positive message. And then the question is, where do they send her? Do they send her just to those rural communities where she's going to appeal to women who are in families that make less than $60,000? Or is she going to go to the suburban so-called collar counties around cities like Philadelphia, slightly more upscale families? That's where a lot of the actual hockey moms live. Hockey's not a cheap sport. You need to have some means. So they will go to Wisconsin and Michigan. They'll go to the sort of prototypical swing county, Macomb County in Michigan. They will be figuring out, as we all are, how much this pitch for Sarah Palin is to sort of the base, how much of it is to more moderate and independent voters in the coming days.
I got a number of emails along this line, this particular one from Cynthia, who said, as a committed Christian, I was deeply offended by Sarah Palin and the Republican delegates mocking and belittling community organizers the other night. She goes on to say, Jesus was a community organizer. Pontius Pilate was a governor. How do you react to that, Anne?
That's a pretty powerful email. I think that a lot of people who weren't community organizers but appreciate that there's volunteer work that people do and that people like to be part of their neighborhood groups had the same reaction to that. It was a pretty sharp comment on Sarah Palin's part.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And I want to come back to you because of a piece in this morning's Washington Post about Bob Woodward's new book. He looks at the surge and says flat out that the surge was not the only reason that we are now thinking about pulling out troops.
Or potentially even the best reason, that there were a lot of new intelligence devices that were put into place, that it was a comprehensive effort, and that it was not at all the surge. Now, what's interesting, of course, from a political standpoint, is that we've seen in the last few days Barack Obama saying that, in fact, the surge, the military tactics of the surge did work. He's had to revise his thinking about how he discusses that somewhat. And we've also seen John McCain talking about the need to do comprehensive work. So I think that this comes at an important time. One other revelation in the book is that he ran into John McCain in the hallway at the West Wing, and McCain used an expletive to complain about the way that the Bush administration was spinning their efforts on the surge. So that will be of interest, I think, to some of the people following the race closely.
And, of course, President Bush, Vice President Cheney, neither one was at the convention. Jackie Combs, Gustav, the hurricane got in the way. But was that something of a relief for John McCain?
Oh, there's no question about it. And the people around Senator McCain, Republicans in his circle and just on the periphery of it, made no secret of their relief that the two of them weren't there. They did not put President Bush's video in prime time, and you hardly heard his word. His name was not mentioned, and delegates didn't even talk about him throughout the whole convention. The New York Times did a poll of the delegates, the Republican delegates, and they are overwhelmingly supportive of President Bush, and in fact said they'd like a President McCain to govern even more conservatively than President Bush has. But at the same time, a majority of them said he has weakened the party. And you know, they may not agree with Democrats as to how he's weakened the party or been a not successful president, but that's what they think.
Weaken the party, John Dickerson?
Well, Republicans, you know, the Republican brand, as they so often talk about it, is in real trouble. You look at the number of Senate Republicans who are up for re-election. Many of them were not in town. They didn't want to be associated with the party. And there are lots of conservatives who are angry at the free spending ways of the Bush administration. There are national security conservatives who are angry at the unilateralism of much of the Bush administration. So there are lots of different parts of the party that are angry for different reasons with the Bush administration. And that's one of the reasons Sarah Palin made everybody so excited, because it reminded them. And of course, everybody here was in a posture to be excited. I mean, it's in some ways like going to a wedding and saying you're happy for the couple. I mean, this is what the expectation is. Having said that, many of them came to town with some reservations. You know, Barack Obama is doing quite well as a candidate, and so there were a lot of mixed feelings coming in. One of the reasons they like Sarah Palin is that she speaks sort of that old time religion, not just about the hot button issues of abortion. In fact, she never mentioned abortion, only sort of glancingly talked about God in her speech. But she whipped up on elites, she beat up on the media, she made fun of Senator Obama in a way that was kind of light and appealing for the Republican audience. So this is what they haven't been able to cheer in Republican ranks for quite some time.
John Dickerson, he's chief political correspondent for Slate.com, Jackie Combs, national correspondent for The New York Times, and Kornblut, reporter for The Washington Post. When we come back, we'll open the phones. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to improve the nation's foster care system to help children find safe, permanent families at pewtrusts.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The Friday News Roundup. A third U.S. warship delivers tons of humanitarian aid to Georgia. General David Petraeus says U.S. forces may be out of Baghdad by next summer. And questions about whether North Korea is rebuilding its nuclear facilities. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And we'll go right to the phones. Let's go first to Adelphi, Maryland. Good morning, Sydney.
Hello.
Hi there.
I just, in comparing Obama's supposed thin resume with Sarah Palin's, I just think it's been too narrowly examined. It's focused on actual time in office, when in fact there's so much more to consider when evaluating a person's qualifications to be president or vice president. What about life experiences that prepare people to be on the world stage? For example, Sarah Palin seems to have spent her entire life in small towns with homogenous populations. Barack Obama lived in many places, including other countries, with people representing many cultures and ethnicities. Sarah Palin went to a small state university. Barack Obama went to one of the premier universities of the world, and his time there was one of distinction. So I'm hoping that people will point these things out and put to rest the whole issue of experience.
All right, Sydney, thanks for your call, Ann Kornblut.
Well, I would say, first of all, that I think we're learning that Sarah Palin went to multiple universities. I saw a story on The Wire last night that she actually went to 5 or 6 over the course of her undergraduate life. But that aside, it's unclear. The schools did not release her grades. And there was some explanation that she had wanted to move from school to school. So we were, as of last night, we were still digging into that. But that question aside, I think it's, sure, of course, voters look at the overall sum total of a candidate to decide what they want, what kind of experience they want in office. I think the question for Sarah Palin is, do we get to learn more about what her experiences were?
Here is an email from Malcolm, who says the media just needs to do their job and not make a big deal about complaints of overreaching. The more they say about it, the worse it becomes. Your panel seems to be really out of touch of the true impact of this vice presidential pick, or perhaps they're simply saying what they wish they could believe. The fact is, it's truly changed the dynamics of this election. If the Obama campaign does not move fast, they'll be left in the dust. Just her presence will bring the 60-plus million votes that Bush got in 2004, and to think there are not a significant number of women who will be affected by this is delusional. Palin makes the mountain states like Colorado, Montana, Utah, even New Mexico. Careful what you wish for. And Malcolm is in San Antonio. What's your reaction, Jackie Combs?
Well, I think to some extent the listener is right, but and we are just going to go about our jobs. I think the writer overstates the impact that Sarah Palin may have, but we don't know. And it has shaken up the dynamic of this race. And someone said, a top Republican said to me yesterday that, it's been a much more exciting convention, but we'll have to see going forward what the long-term effect is. Whereas this person said had Senator McCain picked Minnesota Governor Pawlenty or former Massachusetts Governor Romney or someone like that, it would have been for a more boring convention, but it might have been a safer choice for the long haul.
All right. To Swartz Creek, Michigan. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Diane. It's a delight to hear your show, especially every Friday.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My first question, there are a couple in the course of hearing everything, but would it or could it be beneficial to Barack Obama to make a comparison between Sarah Palin and George Bush as far as their experience, both as governors being evangelical and somewhat with the course of what we've been talking about with the last 8 years have not been that great for a great many people, and with there's so much dissatisfaction, does it make sense to put another governor who in some respects seems so similar to George Bush?
John Dickerson.
Well, I think the Obama campaign wants to stay away from the experience argument and from direct confrontations between Obama and Palin. I think to the extent, and they're still trying to figure out what to make and do with Sarah Palin. The problem with the experience argument is while you can make a case that Barack Obama has different life experiences and maybe has more experiences, the more you have a conversation about experience, the more you're talking about whether Barack Obama has it or doesn't. The Obama campaign would like to just assert that he has has it and move on and talk about what they have a stronger case to make, which is that he is the agent of change, that on the issues that affect people in their lives, he is the one who has the policies and programs to help people in their daily lives where they live. That's important because that's what voters are looking for. And it's also important for Barack Obama to talk about those issues because that's where he's had difficulty connecting with voters.
All right.
So I think they, you know, Senator Obama will leave Sarah Palin and her experience off the table. In fact, he was asked about it yesterday and he said she can talk about her own experience. Here's where I'm coming from. So I think comparisons to George W. Bush, there might be an interesting conversation to have there. But as a strategic and political and tactical matter, I think the Obama campaign will move away from this experience debate.
But this discussion we're having does show the difficulty for Democrats and Senator Obama in that we're doing a, you know, they do not want to be in a position where the top of the Democratic ticket is being compared to the second spot person on the Republican ticket when it's, you know, basically stipulated that John McCain has experience. And, you know, it's just not a good place for Barack Obama to be, and he has to avoid getting or try to get out of that spot.
All right. Here's an email from Barbara, who says, why did your guest say that Jon Stewart and or Stephen Colbert have more flexibility to keep the presidential campaigns more accountable? The Karl Rove video juxtapositions on the experience issue were not scripted opinion or satire, but factual presentations merely presented side by side to reveal the inconsistencies or hypocrisies. Why can't and why don't the network news present the same? Ann Kornblut.
You know, that's a really fair question. And I think we probably all should be going back and looking at all of their past statements. I went back and looked at some of the things that Sarah Palin said about Hillary Clinton during the primaries.
So jazz.
She criticized her for whining about sexism. And of course, we've seen Sarah Palin raise the sexism flag all week. So I think we'll all be doing a lot more of that in the weeks ahead. And I appreciate that note. That
all
reminder.
Right. To Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. How are you, Diane?
Fine. Thank you.
I just have a couple of very quick comments.
Sure.
Number one, that John McCain talked all about being a maverick and running away from the Republicans. But the platform he's running on is the most conservative pro-Bush platform in the history of the party. And secondly, I'd like to talk about Palin for a bit. You know, you mentioned a couple of days ago about her speaking to that Alaska group that wants to separate from the union. She made a couple of provocative statements, but one thing she did not say was that she was against Alaska leaving the union. She, as a sitting governor, you would expect somebody to have made that point very clear. And lastly, we have seen very nice pictures of Senator McCain's mother at the convention being 95 years old. But the fact that his father died at age 70 of natural causes, you know, also needs to be considered in the genetic makeup of Senator McCain and the possibility of Palin becoming president.
Thanks for calling, Rich. Comments, Jackie Combs.
Well, you know, the age issue is a big one hanging out there for Senator McCain. And, you know, people, I think we're going to have to just wait and see whether his choice of Sarah Palin has, you know, has either, you know, may have worsened that issue for people as they look and see, you know, the possibility of him not serving on his term. You know, what's striking to me is even at the convention here, you could get people who would just flat out say to you privately that they don't expect him to survive his first term or they only expect him to serve one term. And I spent at the end of the I spent 2 days in a hotel room late last week, Friday and Saturday, after her Senator McCain announced his choice of her. And I just took a list of undecided women voters and called, you know, dozens of them. And people really have John McCain's age on their mind.
Ann Kornblut.
I think that's absolutely right. I think it's fair game.
What about the question of her appearance at that independence group organization?
It's one of those issues with her, and there are many, that still need to be further explored.
The other is the banning of books and the apparent reaction of the librarian when we talked yesterday with an attorney representing Republicans and Republican candidates. She refused to comment, saying it was a rumor, it had not been proven. Do we know for sure that she did confront a librarian?
It has been reported by credible reporters. It is not an internet rumor. I heard that interview. She ducked it and seemed to go in the direction of this is something that's off limits, but Anita Dunn held her to account and said, no, actually, this is something we're going to pursue. Again, this is why there are teams of reporters on flights to Alaska still going to figure out what's truth and what isn't, but that's something that has been credibly reported.
All right. To Chester, Ohio, good morning, Lawrence. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Good morning to all your panelists.
Hi there.
Wanted to take us back a few moments ago to the discussion that you and the panelists had concerning treatment of Vice President nominee Palin compared to others and what may or may not have been out of bounds, what may or may not have been sexist and misogynistic in terms of the treatment of her. And I hark back, I've been a political junkie for years, and I hark back to the time the unfortunate accident occurred for then-Senator Biden and the loss of his wife and his daughter in that terrible car accident. And he was left with other small children. I just simply do not recall whatsoever anybody in the mainstream media questioning whether a man, Senator Biden, should drop out of office, resign from the Senate, because he has small children to raise. And yet I've heard a couple of your panelists today call into question whether Senator Palin should be vice president or perhaps president because she has a special needs child and four other children. I do think there certainly is a double standard in the national media and certainly do treat women differently from men.
Ann Kornblut.
Well, I'm going to say as a woman that I do not believe I treat other women differently as a reporter, as Jackie said earlier. And nobody is calling into question whether she can be vice president. It's just one of the many questions, excuse me, that are raised about her. At the same time, when Joe Biden went through that terrible accident, he was a senator. He was a first-term senator, in fact. And he was not being called to be a heartbeat away from the presidency, as everyone likes to say, and that is the role that she would be filling.
All right.
Well, if I could just return to that, because on the facts, he was a senator-elect, and there was if you go back and look at the clips, there was a great deal of discussion in that period at Christmas time and whether or not Joe Biden would, in fact, take
exactly.
his oath as senator. And
yes.
he had to make arrangements. His sister moved in with him and helped him to raise the kids. But his lifestyle at that point was very much a question, and he had to be persuaded to take his seat as a senator.
Indeed. At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's talk for just a moment about Jack Abramoff, and Kornblut, because he was given a somewhat reduced sentence. Talk about that.
That's right. He's going to, he has been sentenced to 4 additional years on the corruption charges that he pleaded guilty to. Obviously, this is a case that has gone on for many years now. It's sort of an interesting symbolic coda to the Republican convention in some ways, given that a Republican congressman, Bob Ney, left office, was convicted as a result of the information that he gave up on him. He did get a reduced sentence. He could have gotten almost double or a little more than double what he did receive. In end, he'll probably serve about 6 years. And the prosecutor said they wanted to give him this, show some leniency to encourage people in the future, particularly public officials, to cooperate when there are corruption cases.
All right. To Chris in Elkhart, Indiana. Good morning.
Good morning, Diane. I have a comment and a question.
Sure.
My comment is about the Jon Stewart Show. He made a point interviewing Newt Gingrich the other night about Sarah Palin and her daughter Bristol. And the question is that, and he did it quite articulately, he made a point that Bristol has an opportunity to have a choice as to whether or not she raises or marries, so on and so forth. But Ms. Palin wants to eliminate that choice from other women. And she makes no bones about exclusions from abortion rights as far as the health of the mother in terms of rape, in terms of incest. And the other question I have is I'm curious as to whether or not Ms. Palin's speech was written by herself or someone else wrote that. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Does anyone know the answer to that, John Dickerson?
written, Governor Palin's speech was written by a former White House speechwriter, and she worked with him, and there was a McCain campaign kind of closeted her with the speechwriter and another senior aide from the McCain campaign to work on the speech, to work on the presentation of the speech, to get the words to kind of match her temperament.
Right.
But she didn't. Write the speech.
All right.
Which, of course, is not unusual for politicians.
Sure. Finally, Rich in Little Rock, Arkansas, would like the panel to comment on the McCain decision-making process in selecting Sarah Palin. Ann Kornblut, can you comment?
This has been the big mystery of the week for reporters trying to figure out when exactly he made this decision. It appears that he was making the decision right up to the wire. As we were saying earlier, Lieberman was very much in the running as recently as a week ago, Wednesday, when a lot of conservatives just said, you cannot do this. It will ruin your convention. It seems to have taken place in the midst of a very tight-knit circle. Mark Salter, of course, is the close McCain aide who's written a lot of books with him. McCain himself, Lindsey Graham, was making a lot of calls on his behalf. It was not the sort of quiet, organized effort that Obama had that was tightly held. Eventually, it leaked before McCain's did. In fact, it leaked 24 hours in advance, whereas McCain's didn't leak at all. But it was really, it seems, driven by the candidate himself and not by the lawyers in the process.
That's very interesting. All right. Well, much, much more to come in the 60 days ahead. And as always, we'll be here to talk about it. Ann Kornblut of The Washington Post, Jackie Combs of The New York Times, John Dickerson of Slate.com. Thank you all so much. And thanks for listening all. Have a great weekend. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Susan Neighbors. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Emily Robichaud answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.